We have a concept at Street Business School that will be familiar to some of your listeners called Kaizen. And Kaizen is the recognition that change is the only constant. My team in Uganda will be like, we're doing the Kaizen dance again, which means we're changing, you know, we're seeing change. And recognizing that change can be uncomfortable, I think it's been valuable to us to explicitly acknowledge when change is happening and that it can be uncomfortable. So that's one thing that I would say has been a helpful tool.
This is Mission to Scale, a podcast that reveals the tools, mindsets, and strategies that organizations and funders need to make the most impact. Because the world's biggest problems need solutions at scale. I'm your host, Dan Berenovitz. In 2010, New York Times columnist Nicholas Kristof wrote an opinion piece titled Partying to Change the World. The article told the story of Torkan Wakefield and her daughter, Devon Hibbard, who while in Uganda bought necklaces from a local woman.
I started my journey 18 years ago as someone who ended up in Uganda and met a woman who was rolling strips of paper into jewelry and had no markets for the jewelry.
That's Devon.
I went on with a couple other women to co-found a nonprofit called Bead for Life. That was in 2004, one of the earliest social enterprises. It was so early that we didn't have the term social enterprise. It was just a nonprofit that happened to make all of its money through product sales rather than through philanthropic contributions. And that organization grew to be a couple million dollar a year organization, supporting women who were making jewelry, but also who eventually we taught to start small businesses. We created a curriculum to help them start small local businesses and graduate out and be self-sufficient.
But over time, competition from other social enterprises increased, making the business more challenging. Then the COVID-19 pandemic prevented gatherings and events, which were opportunities to sell products and tell stories of women overcoming poverty. Retail sales collapsed. After more than a decade, Bead for Life shut down. But as you'll hear, green shoots for a new venture were already showing. In identifying topics to cover for Mission to Scale, I thought it was critical to tackle change and how nonprofit leaders and social entrepreneurs can manage it. In this episode, we'll talk to Devon about how Bead for Life transitioned into a new nonprofit, Street Business School. Devon shares the journey of piloting new initiatives, growing them, and then being bold and taking her organization in a new direction.
Out of Bead for Life and the curriculum that we created to help people start small businesses who were living in poverty came Street Business School. And Street Business School is now an independent organization, NGO, that serves people all around the world through partner organizations that we franchise our curriculum to. And the interesting thing I think about this journey to become a social entrepreneur and even to think of myself as an entrepreneur is that it took me years and years and years to even think that I was an entrepreneur. You know, I thought I was sort of a development professional and was interested in poverty eradication, but I never really thought about myself as an entrepreneur until I got offered a job working for another organization. And then I was like, no way I'm going to work for somebody else. You know, I really have this love of putting my shoulder to the wheel and seeing what I can do. So it took a lot for me to feel like I was an entrepreneur.
That's wonderful, but you've clearly had a lot of success. And I think one of the things you've done pretty unusually well, actually, is create change within an existing organization, which is not easy to do, because you've talked a bit about your Bead for Life story and where that was started. But then Street Business School came along and Bead for Life is no more. So could you share a bit about why you decided to transition to Street Business School?
For me, the goal was always scale. For me, the goal has always been, how do we reach the most number of people that we can. And so even when we were running Bead for Life, and serving, you know, hundreds of people a year, I had an eye towards how do we continue to grow our work. And I have to say, our board at that time also was able to embrace that mindset. And that mindset is really about, it's not about how can we just further ourselves all the time. It's not just about the organization's survival. It's about how can we line ourselves up behind creating impact. And in some cases, that means launching a new organization and putting the original organization to rest. And so that's what happened over a period of many, many years. But I have to say, I credit the Bead for Life board with really thinking about how can we focus on what we do best, what we uniquely do best, and push towards that. And what it became clear over a period of many years when we tried a lot of different things is that we had developed a very unique business training program that was targeted to women living in extreme poverty. It was accessible for women who are non-literate. It was all very experiential and gamified. And when we finally got clear that that was the highest value we had to offer to the world, it was relatively easy to say, how do we continue to focus all of our energy behind that?
So you said you credit your board, which I thought was really interesting, actually, because these change processes, certainly you need to engage your board. But my experience with a strong entrepreneur such as yourself is it often that impetus comes from the entrepreneur, and it's, of course, in discussion and with the board advising. What was the interplay sort of in this period of change between you and the board? How much was it from you, and how much did you use the board, or was the board pushing you in that direction?
I would say that it's always been my passion is to think about how we reach more people, and I am not attached to one way of doing that. So absolutely, I was a very strong voice of scale and focusing in on what we were best at. I had a couple really strong allies on the board, individuals who were also very aligned with that. And so that also helped, you know, just continuing to come back because it's hard to change what you do over time. But I think at the end of the day, we did a pretty amazing process of evolving. And, you know, it took years. It did take years. And eventually what happened is that Street Business School as a program started within Bead for Life. We were actually able to fund all of the sort of initial piloting and testing of Street Business School and the early evaluation. We then launched Street Business School as a project of Bead for Life that kind of had an external facing presence and its own website and its own branding. And eventually we became two separate organizations. We were sister NGOs. And we intended to continue as sister organizations. And then COVID was sort of the death knell for jewelry sales for the Bead for Life revenue streams. Mm. And so at that point, we had two separate boards. And I also have to credit the Bead for Life board of directors. At that point, they very gracefully said, you know, rather than fingernails on chalkboard dragging ourselves to the very end when we run out of our last dollar, let's have a beautiful and graceful closing process and let's grant every last dollar we have still available to help Street Business School take flight.
Fabulous. Okay. So the money actually went across and sort of gave a leg up to Street Business School. I mean, I know you've written when an organization is doing best is the time to innovate because others will copy you. And you also said that you were too slow to adapt and that cost you at Bead for Life. So it sounds like COVID was the sort of final decision. But do you think there was a point beforehand where you could have acted more quickly or differently? What are your reflections on that period?
I would say in 2007, 2008, we were for many years the only people who were doing paper beaded jewelry. We had a very particular sales model and we kind of got cocky. We kind of thought that we were the only game in town and there was a lot of opportunity to sell our products in ways that weren't as sort of mission concentric to how we wanted to think about, you know, the women who are making the products and telling their stories. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, two particular examples, I would say, of things that in hindsight, I think we didn't choose the right path. One was, I always wanted, we had a lot of media focus and media attention, and I always really wanted the story to be about the women. And the journalists that were interviewing us never wanted that, you know, they wanted, oh, like, here's the story of an American woman who's done something. And I really rebelled against that. In hindsight, that might, you know, every free media placement is good PR. So that was something probably that was more principled than it might have been most helpful to be. And the second is that we really didn't maximize the opportunity to sell in retail stores where you're getting only a portion of the profit.
Mm.
And other organizations came in and filled that vacuum. So the competition was pretty fierce and took opportunities that we had sort of passed by. All of that said, you know, we also think about all of our competitors with Bead for Life as people who were also serving women who were living in poverty. So it at the end of the day, to fight over who gets this contract when everybody's doing good work and creating economic capacity for women living in poverty, you know, we think of all of it as a good thing. And we think of the people who were competing against us also as collaborators, because we were all essentially at the end of the day doing the same work. So, it's an interesting perspective. But those were two opportunities that I think eventually hurt us.
Can you talk a bit more about what was the sort of the moment when you realized that you needed to pivot from where you were, you know, selling beads into street business school, and maybe the key differences in what you wanted to do around that decision?
I wouldn't say that we were driven to innovate street business school by a business crisis. I would say that back in 2008, again, with this desire to reach more people, we actually launched about 5 different programs in Uganda at the time to really see what could we do that would reach dramatically more people. With Bead for Life, we were reaching a maximum of about 300 women each year, and we wanted to do more than that. And so in 2008, 2009, we tried a bunch of different initiatives to see what would stick. One of those initiatives was, let's take this business training that we've developed for the bead makers, and let's try offering it to people who never make a product for us at all. There's no exchange of cash. There's no startup funds. They are simply getting the knowledge. We thought it would never work. We were like, this is crazy. And we piloted it, and we had some really surprising early success. We found that some of them had come in with small businesses already. There was one person who had a milk, they would get milk and they'd sell it. And it was actually a guy. And he came into street business school and he learned the curriculum, and he realized that he could double his money by selling in the afternoon as well as the morning. It was simple things, you know, it wasn't rocket science. But we just found that from these early data points that we got, it was less intensive to deliver the program, which made it more cost effective, and people were having dramatic results. And so it was really an analysis of all those ideas that we started in 2008, 2009, long before we ever thought Bead for Life would go away, that led to Street Business School. And again, we sort of said, okay, we've tried all these things, let's focus in. What's the one that's, you know, really performing?
And what were the main challenges around making that transition from one to the other? You make it sound like it was a sort of natural flow, but of course, when you're in the moment, there's always ups and downs and things that you need to overcome. Was there anything that jumps out as being particularly challenging moments?
I think that as the ethical product market got more crowded and bead sales started to decline, the instinct was to run faster in the, you know, gerbil wheel to sell more products. And that distracted from the time and attention we had to put towards street business school. So I would say that there was really a challenging, probably 2 years of like, we want to keep this going. And at this point, I was running both organizations. You know, we want to keep the product sales going, but we have this other thing that we're excited about, and it's got legs and it's really scalable. And so I would say that that was the biggest crunch, was just time. You know, that most precious resource that we all have is how do you focus on which things are most important. And the other thing that I would say, the other challenge we ran into, is that as we started to think about expanding and training other NGOs how to use Street Business School's curriculum to market to those organizations under the brand Bead for Life, was very confusing. People were like, what? Bead for Life? Business training? You're going to train us to make beads? You know, it wasn't a good fit in terms of sort of the brand cohesion.
Interesting. So, I mean, it does sound like the world is very much telling you change is needed. With hindsight, and, you know, maybe this was impossible in the moment, with hindsight, do you think you would have been able to make that change more quickly? Or if you say you were to do something like this again, would you make that change more quickly, a sort of brave decision ahead of the curve? Or is that just a very, you know, the reality is it's challenging to do?
I would hope to say that I would make it more quickly, Dan, because I'm so much more brilliant now than I was then. And I have to say, those were really hard years on me personally. Like, it was tough. It felt like I was in the grinder of, you know, one business sort of on the downhill and another business taking off and trying to figure out where do you put your time and energy. So I hope that I learned something from that process. But I also think that, you know, we cling to what we know and we want things to work out. And I think the eventual solution, which was creating two organizations, was such a relief. It was such a wonderful way to give each organization the focus and the staff time that it truly deserved to make it as brilliant as it could be, right? But yes, I wish I'd done that sooner. And in the next moment of evolution, which, by the way, we've planted some seeds in that direction of what the next iteration is, I hope that I make the jump more quickly.
During COVID, Devon went down a path that not all organizations took, and that is to scale its operations. Here, Devon talks about the tactics she used to adapt to the changes created by the pandemic.
I think the most important piece of our response to COVID was that I have the incredible honor of working with a team of people that are unstoppable. And when COVID hit, the like collective pain that my team felt at the number of people who were being pushed back into extreme poverty was palpable in meetings. You know, we just were all like grieving together because COVID had this obviously dramatic health impact, but the economic fallout of COVID that is still being felt is pushing millions and millions of people back into extreme poverty. As we speak, in the first reversal, you know, the first growth in extreme poverty in several decades. So the fact that we all work day in and day out with people who are struggling to literally feed their kids, the pain of seeing millions more people in that situation was something that we were not going to take easily. So there was just this sense that we had no option but to lean in and to be bold and to do what we could to respond. So that was the underpinning of this like dramatic increase in what we wanted to do in this last year of difficulty. Some of the tactics that we used, you know, in the very immediate first moments of COVID, we saw that the many of the entrepreneurs that we had worked with were now in lockdown, in quarantine, government imposed quarantine, and that literally they couldn't run their businesses. And because of that, their income has evaporated. And so we're an organization that believes very strongly in not giving handouts, giving people opportunity to change their own lives. For the first time in our history, we did cash grants across the board because we saw people were skipping meals every week. And it felt like the right thing to do. So we were flexible in our sort of ideology. That's the most immediate thing that we did. We also started immediately getting on the phone with both our NGO partners and our alumni and just connecting, you know, what is it you need? We set up a SMS phone health information systems. We had a website with resources. So really trying to understand what were the challenges that were facing the different groups that we support and trying to step into that gap.
Street Business School also developed a virtual training program so that it could continue training NGOs to join the network.
So we created an online training. We really focused on making it high quality. You know, I think a lot of people have thrown up online trainings in the last year. We spent almost 6 months making sure that we understood the pedagogy of how do you train really well online, which is different than how you train in person. Mm-hmm. And making sure that our content was still very sticky and engaging. So that's a medium-term response. And then I would say in the last couple months, we've really understood the long-term effects of COVID on our partners, particularly our NGO partners. You know, there's some data that shows that 85% of organizations in the last year and a half have seen their budgets stay steady or decrease. Only 15% of organizations have seen their budgets increase. And we're incredibly honored to be part of that 15%. And so one of the things we did is we said, our partners are struggling. We have 120 NGO partners in 25 countries around the world. And we actually created an implementation fund so that if they needed help to continue their work with doing Street Business School, that they could apply and receive some funding awards from Street Business School.
Obviously, this is awful that it needed to happen at all. It's a terrible situation, but it sounded like it breeded a lot of creativity. Were there any sort of lessons or these innovations that came up through COVID that you think you'll carry on beyond the pandemic, or any lessons, in fact, that you learned that you'd like to take beyond the pandemic?
Yeah, absolutely. Several of the things. So our virtual training, you know, we built really solid metrics around that so we could evaluate how effective it is going forward based on what we've seen in the effectiveness and the fact that it allows us to reach organizations that are further from Africa. That's something that we will continue to keep in our program portfolio going forward. So we will now offer both virtual training and in-person training. So that's one thing that we'll keep. I think also we really learned something around designing new programs. You know, our program team, as they were designing the virtual training, they also were sort of creating a manual for how do we create new products.
Interesting.
That I think is a really valuable roadmap for us that will help us every time now that we want to iterate or create something new to understand what are the steps in that process. And so that was a really good roadmap for what it might look like ahead. And then, you know, I mentioned we launched something that we called the Moonshot. And the Moonshot was really out of this desperation to address the people who were falling into extreme poverty. How can Street Business School 10X our impact? And so we put together like a small working group of the smartest people that we know, and they came up with two ideas that will really dramatically allow us to expand that we're now piloting in Uganda.
That's great. Can you share a bit more about what the ideas are, or is that under wraps at the moment?
So the two ideas, one of them is expanding our work to serve people in refugee camps. Refugees are among the poorest population in the world, and they are in geographically contained spaces. And so we feel like if we can really customize our program to serve the needs of people in refugee camps, it could have a dramatic scale. So that's one that we're testing. The second one is a pilot to deliver Street Business School over the phone. So breaking our curriculum into bite-sized pieces that can be delivered wherever someone is who has a phone.
They sound like great ideas. I love that you're thinking forward as well. If you were to think about the changes from, you know, all the way back from Bead for Life through to making that change and now COVID, are there any recommendations you'd give to other leaders in social organizations when it comes to managing change?
We have a concept at Street Business School that will be familiar to some of your listeners called Kaizen. And Kaizen is the recognition that change is the only constant. We talk about the Kaizen dance. My team in Uganda will be like, we're doing the Kaizen dance again, which means we're changing. You know, we're seeing change and recognizing that change can be uncomfortable. I think it's been valuable to us to explicitly acknowledge when change is happening and that it can be uncomfortable. So that's one thing that I would say has been a helpful tool. I would say we have also learned that transparency with the team is really important. You know, there were times when various teams didn't have as much information about what was going on. And so we've tried really hard since realizing that to be clear about what's happening and what change is happening and what that looks like. So I would say that that's one thing. The other thing about COVID that I would say, or change in general, is, you know, we leaned in the first weeks of COVID. We declared that we were going to do more. We started giving cash grants before we had raised money to give cash grants. And it was a little bit risky because we didn't know what our financial position was going to be. You know, we were worried that donors would be, you know, reallocating their funds or not able to meet their commitments, certainly not increasing their gifts. But I think that there was something about us being driven by the mission, being driven by what we are meant to do in the world, that inspired people. You know, mm-hmm. I talked a lot about being bold. And I think that if you follow your mission, the resources will follow, and whatever the resources are, dollars or people's time or whatever it is. And that is certainly something we found. People were so delighted to stand beside us to help us respond in a bold way. And so I would just say, even though it's scary, that during times of change, sometimes the best solution is to go in as hard as you can.
Devin's journey and that of Bead for Life and now Street Business School has been anything but a straight line. But by understanding where real impact was coming from and taking time to carefully develop and iterate a business model for scale, Devin was able to create a network that's not only growing fast, but also helping thousands of women. And of course, change keeps coming, so I'm excited to see where these projects end up a decade from now. If you're interested in learning more about Street Business School, please visit streetbusinessschool.org. We've also provided a link in our show notes. That's it from us. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Please don't forget to subscribe or follow our podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And while you're there, I'd appreciate it if you could rate us and give us a review. If you love Mission to Scale, I hope you recommend our show to a friend or colleague. Mission to Scale is produced by Spring Impact and Human Group Media. If you want to learn more about our work at Spring Impact, visit springimpact.org and follow us at Spring Impact on Twitter. Thank you so much for joining us, and I'll catch you all in the next episode.